Golf is back. Hashtag PGA Tour.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me, as always, on Twitter, at redrock_bball. We're going to go through the two games that we had on Thursday, answer your question of the day, look at a player in Spotlight, the Player Spotlight series, and, of course, preview Friday's 10-game DFS slate. So,
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. There were only two games on Thursday, so that portion of the show is going to be, I guess, relatively quick, especially when you compare it to the 10-game Friday we've got on. Let's get straight into the monstrous line of the night, and it does go to Draymond Green of the Golden State Warriors. He was impressive again. He always seems to do fairly well against the Rockets, and it was no exception here. A second triple-double for the season, 17, 14, and 10, two steals and a block, 5 of 9 from the field, 7 of 8 from the line. He's sort of doing exactly what we expected from him. He's the 18th ranked player this season. He was 19th last season, 10.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 1.5 steals, 1.3 blocks, 1.2 triples. But the big improvement he's had since last season is his efficiency. His shooting has gone up. Field goals from 42 to 46, free throws from 71 to 78, and threes from 31 to 33 to see his true shooting rise by 6%, which is back in line with the numbers that he put up in that season, the Warriors 73-9 season before KD arrived, when he had this weird drop last season in his efficiency numbers. But he's back in business again this year and providing that second round value. But of course, he is a large detriment in the points category, and that's not going to change. But everything else he brings you, he's obviously very, very impressive, and you don't expect really too much to change with Draymond as the season progresses. The waiver wire line of the night is another bloke called Green, and that's Gerald of the Houston Rockets. 29 points for Gerald Green, 8 triples, 3 rebounds, 1 steal, 9 of 16 from the field, and 3 of 3 from the line. I know I said he wouldn't be able to repeat what he did against Orlando, and I was right, because he hit 7 threes in that game. He hit 8 in this one. Of course, this level of shooting is completely unrealistic. He is now 15 of 25 in the last two games from deep. There is absolutely zero chance that sort of level continues. He's playing a ton of minutes. He played all the backup minutes behind Eric Gordon and all the backup minutes behind Trevor Ariza. We also had PJ Tucker barely playing any of those minutes because Nene was out, so he moved into that center rotation. We're going to get Luke Mamute back at some point soon. Nene, he may or may not be back, but in a game against a team that doesn't, like the Warriors, doesn't require a center, I think that these minutes might be a little bit high for Gerald Green. Again, we're trying to find out how he's going to fit into these minutes, and Mike D'Antoni was pretty specific before the game, saying that Bryonte Weber was going to handle all of the backup point guard minutes, and he's done that for these two games, meaning we don't get Eric Gordon playing those minutes, meaning that then Gerald Green gets reduced to the minutes, perhaps just behind Gordon, especially if Mamute is taking all the backup minutes behind Trevor Ariza. That's going to have an impact on what Gerald can do. The last two games have been brilliant, though. He's given you 56 points. He's giving you 15 threes and 9 rebounds over that time on stupendous efficiency. Numbers which, of course, have absolutely no way of being able to continue. Over the last week, he's the 21st ranked player in those four games that he's played in that time. 21 points with over 5 triples per game. You all know the numbers are ridiculous. You can add him and play him if you want. He plays again on Saturday, the Rockets, and they're on again on Monday. But once Mamute returns, which I don't know when that'll be, there will be a minutes drop, and there's an inevitable field goal percentage drop. Unless he's Reggie Bullock and continues to shoot at like 65%, I cannot see Gerald being able to maintain this level of production. It's been fantastic. That's great. We know he can shoot the three to a decent degree. He can't shoot it to this degree. His past four seasons, he's been at 35%, 32%, 35%, and then that year in Phoenix where he played 28 minutes a night, he did shoot it at 40, but he's currently going at 57%. So we're talking about a fairly large level of regression that's going to be coming from Gerald. Try and ride it out, but literally the next game, it could completely drop off. And then when Luke returns, the minutes will drop down quite a bit as well. But a nice performance from him here. Of course, it all amounts to nothing because the Warriors end up winning, but it was a good performance from Gerald Green. Got those threes going, but I think we all know not to expect that to continue. The young gun of the night. There wasn't very much to choose from on this day with only the two games on. I'm going with Juwan Evans of the LA Clippers. He started the second half with Milos Teodosic's plantar fascia injury flaring up again. 20 minutes in total, 4 points, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal for Juwan. We've seen him have a couple of big games already this season, and that makes him mildly interesting. He's had a game back against the Wizards on the 15th of December where he had 15-6-6 with 5 steals, against the Rockets on the 22nd of December where he had 15-1-4 with 3 triples in 26 minutes. He also had a 27-minute game against the Kings where he had 7-2-4. Now, with Austin Rivers out for at least 2 weeks, with Milos re-hurting or at least feeling soreness in his plantar fascia, and Patrick Beverley out for the season, Evans could be leaned upon. We didn't see him. Look, they've still got Lou Williams, they've still got CJ Williams there, but Evans is a guy who's going to be in line for more minutes. Now, is this a must-own guy? No, I wouldn't put him as a must-own guy under any circumstance, but actually, that's not true. In some circumstances, if I'm in a 2010 league, he's a clear must-own. If I'm in a 16-10 league, I'd probably go and add him because we're looking at maybe 2 weeks of 18-team value, and if Milos is out, maybe he can get to 16 or 14-team league value in that time frame. And you'd have to assume that Teodosic is going to miss at least a little bit of time with this flare-up of his plantar fascia. Again, remember, that's the injury that kept him out after the second game of the season for those 2 months or however long he was sidelined. I think it was 2 months that he was sidelined to begin the season. So Juwan Evans is a guy, and one of those guys, again, he projected really well coming out of college for his fantasy numbers, his ability to get high assists, high steals, shoot some threes. It's bared out a little bit this season. Yeah, per 36, he's averaging 12-4-4 with 2 steals, a 3, and the shooting percentages just haven't been there, which is pretty common stuff for a rookie. So he's a name to watch. He's a name to stream. The Warriors, the Clippers have the Warriors up on Saturday, then they play again on Monday as well. So there is maybe a little bit of value in getting him for maybe a couple of games there. They also have 2 games against the Kings at the end of next week, which really could give him an opportunity, assuming that Milos is out. So he's a name to consider, but far from a must-own guy. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Trevor Ariza of the Houston Rockets, 3 points, 3 rebounds, 1 of 8 from the field with 1 3 and 2 steals. Far from the greatest night from Trev. He is the 64th ranked player this season, but over the last 2 weeks, he has seen his numbers drop down to outside the top 115, averaging 13-4-1.5 and playing 39 minutes. But part of the reason why those numbers have dropped is because his steal numbers have dropped off. He was a guy that for the previous 3 seasons had been at 1.9, 2 and 1.8 steals. And that was the biggest thing holding up his fantasy value. In fact, that along with 3-pointers were the only things that were a positive. And you know that I don't count turnovers as a category. So look, the steals were what's really keeping his value afloat. Over the last 2 weeks, he's down to 1.1, which is really making him from a super positive steals guy into a mediocre guy. Now, for the season, he's at 1.6 steals per game. That's obviously lower than 1.8 because I can count. And it's given his advancing age and his defense level dropping off a little bit, it does make, and I told you I wasn't super high on him heading into this season, and he has outdone my expectations so far this season. But what we're seeing over the last 2 weeks are the sort of numbers that I was more fearful of him putting up over the course of this season. And while that might return, it's not like his numbers or his ranking in that time is fueled by poor shooting. He's at 44% and 36 from 3. It's more that the steals have dropped off. And when you drop by half a steal a game, that's a big difference from being the 60th ranked guy or the 120th ranked guy. That's how big steals can be. And that's why guys, when you look at rankings and projections, guys like Joe Ingles appear so high is because of the steal numbers. They do really influence things quite significantly in those back ends of the rankings, and you can see that pretty much here with Ariza, with all his other numbers being almost identical when you compare the last 2 weeks versus the whole season. It's just that he's at half a steal less, and that drops him down by 50-60 spots. It is a huge, huge difference, and a big drop off that is something we do have to pay some attention to with him. We're not dropping him or anything like that, but and he got 2 steals in this game, so that's obviously good, but it is something we do want to pay some level of attention to. All right, we're going to get into question time. Because it was only 2 games on today, I'm going to answer 2 questions, and mainly because I didn't want to choose between them because they were both questions that I thought might be interesting. We're not looking at basketball questions on today's show. We're going to vary it up, basketball stuff, fantasy stuff, and other general information type questions. So the questions come from the first one from Nick Kraft. He's on Twitter at Crafty29, and he says, You've traveled to the States before, I assume. Where have you been thus far, and where would you like to go next? That's a good question, and I always take submissions from you guys as to where I should go when I travel to the States. I'm undecided if I'm coming over for Summer League again this year now, 2018. Probably will. Haven't decided. I've been to the States six times now, I think. Yeah, I think I've been there six different times to the United States. I have been to Vegas a lot, obviously, for Summer League. I've been to San Francisco multiple times because my brother was living there for a couple of years. I've been to Los Angeles. I've been to Chicago, which I went for the first time in 2017. I went to Salt Lake City for the first time in 2017. I've been to New York City a few times. I've been to Niagara Falls, the American and the Canadian side. I've been to New Orleans. I have been to Miami. I've been to Orlando. I've been to Washington, D.C. I think that's probably it. I think I've been to Baton Rouge. I drove out there one day on a day trip. Orange County, obviously, as well, when I was in L.A. I think that's probably... I'm trying to think if there's any places that I've missed. They're all the places that I've been to. I always want to go when I go is go to a new place each time. The places I'm considering are Seattle, Portland, San Diego, and Nashville. They're the places I've got pretty good recommendations for. So they're the places I am considering. The place I do want to go to is Philadelphia as well, just to check that out. So that's somewhere I haven't been to. But they're the places that are on my next to travel. Oh, I've been to Hawaii as well. So I've been to Oahu and Honolulu in Hawaii. So that's another place I've been to. But they're the places that are on my list that I would like to attempt to travel to if I go there next. Well, this year now in July. Julian Gonzalez says. He is at _ruiner. What drove you away from the NFL? Did you have a team? Do you still watch occasionally? Do you play any fantasy? What, if anything, can get you back? What drove me away from the NFL? There's a multitude of things. This job, part of it, because you had to spend so much time working on basketball that actually trying to invest yourself in a sport like the NFL and keep on top of everything. And when I was into the NFL, I was really big into it, and I was big into watching college football and knew all the stuff that happened across both forms of those games, and knew about all the prospects and all that sort of stuff. So getting into this job and focusing more on the NBA was one thing. The time that it takes for a game to be completed is ludicrous, to be honest. Like four and a half hours is out of control. That's a part of it. The way the NFL handled many things, the Ray Rice stuff was putrid. I thought that was really poor. And just the ridiculousness of the unchecked cracks to the head. I remember I tried to watch a couple of years ago, maybe it was last season, and it was opening night. It was Broncos Panthers, I believe, and Cam Newton was just getting hit in the head. Every single time, the bloke could barely stand up. He didn't know what he was doing. What's the point in this? This guy is just getting smashed in the head every single play. They are targeting his head. They are using their heads as weapons. And it was just, I said, what's the point? This is just stupid. Like, not, and if you like football, good on you. I know it's all ingrained in you, and I enjoy the strategy of it, the chess matchness, the athletic catches. I don't like people putting their heads down and saying, I'm just going to bang you with my head. That's stupid to me, and I am a massive fan of contact sports. I grew up playing, and I still watch Australian football every week, and that is all contact, but it's a different sort of contact than what the NFL is. People aren't literally trying to smash each other in the head, and the way that Newton was getting hit in that, guy's, well, what's the fun in this? Like, he's just getting crunched every single game. It's decreasing the quality of the game in terms of what he's able to do offensively, and it was just it just wasn't for me. Add on all those other things to it, and I'm done. Now, do I have a team? Yeah, the Dolphins were my team, so I've been waiting for a championship for a very, very long time, and I don't think it's coming anytime soon. Their level of dysfunction is not low. We'll put it that way, so I don't think they're getting anything back. What, if anything, can get me back? I don't think I'm coming back at all to the NFL. I have not watched a single snap or a single game at all this season. I don't have time for it, and I just have no interest in it whatsoever. Lots of those things. As I mentioned, Julian, that is a good question. I know many of you are massive NFL fans, and I don't play any NFL fantasy either. All right, let's get into these games now and talk about the box scores. There's not a huge amount to talk about because, again, there is only two of those games, and the fantasy value in that is a little bit limited. The Warriors get the victory over the Rockets. Kevin Durant was out with a calf issue. David West hurt his ankle late in this game. Steph was great. He's been absolutely fantastic since returning from his injury. 29, 9, and 5, 4 triples, super efficient, while Clay had 28, 3, and 4 with 6 triples. Just brilliant stuff from both of those guys. While Andre Iguodala made the start, he played 31 minutes, 10 points, 8 assists, 2 steals and a block. He hasn't been very good at all this season. Those steals are nice. The assists are nice. But even if Durant was to miss considerable time, I don't think we'd be looking at Iguodala and going, oh, he's going to be a must-own 12-team league guy or anything like that. I think the player that most of you want to hear about is Jordan Bell, who'd been playing a consistent 20, 21 minutes a night. But for some reason in this game, his role was taken over by Kevon Looney, who played okay. He was decent down the stretch, was pretty aggressive in terms of his rebounding, offensive rebounding. He had 7 and 8 in 15 minutes, Looney with a block, while Jordy Bell just the 6 minutes and 1 block. I don't think that this game is indicative of future rotations for Bell or future role for him. But if you are in a battle for positioning, you go, I don't want to deal with this. As I said, yes, I talked about him on the player spotlight. I love his upside if he can get to 28 or 29 minutes. And I said, I'm pretty sure I said, I hope I said, I don't see that happening for him this season. I don't see any real way that's going to happen. But he still can contribute in 20 minutes a game. Now, he can't contribute in 6 minutes per game. But I don't think that the 6 minutes per game is going to be a realistic thing that we see from him on an ongoing basis. Looney and JaVale had been out of the rotation, replaced by Bell. Kerr has a habit of doing this, just randomly playing guys. Looney might play for another 2 games and then not play again. So I wouldn't be panicking too much on Bell, especially if you're in a nice position. He's a guy that's been a comfortable top 100 player over the last couple of weeks, as we discussed on yesterday's show in the Player Spotlight series. But if Looney is back in the rotation, that further impacts what Bell can do. But remember, David West might miss some time here. Apparently, that ankle injury looked pretty ugly in the locker room after the game. So Bell could be taking on West's minutes, and that could mean he plays 23 minutes or at least back to 20 while Looney gets 15 to 16. So I wouldn't be massively just, oh, quick, I've got to drop him. Because, again, most of the time, it's not about I've got to drop. It's about I've got to add. And if there's someone out there that you really need to add, then sure, maybe. But it's not like I'm dropping him as a punishment, because I can assure you he doesn't give a shit whether you drop him. It's not a punishment to him. And it's a one-game thing, maybe because of the opponent. We'll see how it all goes. But it obviously wasn't a great thing for Jordan Bell and his fantasy value this game. Onto the Rockets, Eric Gordon was great. 38 minutes, 30 points, 7 assists, 3 steals and a block. These are the sort of numbers that Gordo was putting up to begin the season when Paul was out. He takes on a more varied role. He handles the ball more, he drives more, he gets to the free throw line more, and we're going to see some big numbers from Gordo here until Jim returns. Chrissy Paul had 28, 7, and 9, so a strong night from him, while Capella 15 and 10 in 28 minutes. Ryan Anderson was struggled, as he has pretty much all of the season. He is not a 10-teamer, he is not a 12-teamer, I can't stress that enough. Or Briante Weber, in those backup minutes to Chris, had 2, 2, and 2. He had the piss-poor version of a Richie Beno, 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists. But he is a guy that you can, on a low-volume night, now he didn't get any tonight, but he's an interesting steals sort of guy, because he can get them in bunches. You would have heard on the broadcast today, they kept going on about how he was only 12 steals away from the NCAA all-time record for most steals. The last game, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Clippers, there was no Alex Abrines. He was out with that groin issue again, and Andre Robertson out, so Terry Ferguson got another start. He wasn't as good as he was against the Lakers, but still pretty solid. Played good minutes, 11 points with three triples. The shooting wasn't as on fire as that last game, but Donovan hasn't had massive trust in what Abrines has done for most of this season. He's had issues at times with Robertson, his lack of offense. So if Ferguson can at least provide a spacing threat and provide credible defense, I can see him at least cutting into Abrines' time. And maybe instead of Robertson playing 34, 35 minutes a night, there'll be more of those 27 to 29 minute games. So that's something to pay attention to. He's looked pretty solid in these last 2 games, much better than we've seen him at any point during the season, but it's not something to get overly worked up about. Paulie George had 31 and 6 with 5 triples on really good shooting, 75%, while Mallow had 75 as well, 75% that is, 22, 4 and 2 with 3 triples for Carmelo Anthony. Russ triple-doubled, Adams had 12 and 9 with a steal and a block, and Jeremy Grant chimed in with 3 blocks, and that's pretty much all he is good for. Onto the Clippers side, DeAndre 26 and 17 was strong. Wes Johnson, with the injury to Rivers, the injury now to Milos, we saw him get back up to 30 minutes, the most minutes he's played since he returned from his injury, 13 points. But what he really does is bring the triple one stats. 3 triples, 2 steals, 1 block for Wes Johnson. He can be a streamer for that sort of thing, but he's not going to be a must-own player. Lou Williams, 26, 3 and 10. He's going to continue to put up big, big numbers and lots of shot attempts. While Blake Griffin, a really nice stat line, 24, 9 and 7 in 33 minutes. Also punched Steven Adams right in the face in the end of the game. Now, I don't know if it's going to be suspended. I don't know if anyone picks up on it. If you want to go and check it out, you'll see the highlight anywhere. Now, I haven't seen one person mention it, to be honest. It was in right at the end. I can't think. Westbrook was taking a three, and Adams was setting a screen, and Blake ran into him, and then Blake pulled Adams to the ground. But as he was pulling him to the ground from behind, the right hand comes around from the back, punches him in the face. Just a little hook punch just around the corner. And it's there. You can go watch the video. I don't care what you say. It's a cheap shot. Now, I said yesterday, I don't think there are any dirty players in the NBA. I don't think Blake Griffin's a dirty player. That's a dirty act. That's a dog act to throw that little cheapy punch as you're going to the ground from behind, just smack into the upper cheekbone. And go and have a look. And if you can, maybe you want to argue with me and tell me that's not there, there's a punch there. I am convinced. I know other people, after that, I tweeted out, they had a look. They said, yep, there's a little cheapy around the corner there. Go and have a look at it. He might get a suspension, but in my opinion, he definitely throws just a little one, just a little sneaky one, as they fall onto the ground, right into his face. It's something that happens all the time, or maybe not as much. It used to happen quite a lot in the AFL and Australian football, so I'm pretty used to seeing it. You see that little hand, just a little quick movement right into the side of the head as the player's moving down, and that's exactly what it looked like Griffin did to me. So just keep an eye on that. That might be something. It might be nothing. CJ Williams, 6 points in 33 minutes with a steal. He's been starting lots of minutes, but the production's very, very limited for him most of the time. While Sindarius Thornwell, he got some extra run, but I do like what he can do, but he's going to have an opportunity, but it's more going to be a 20-team league, and I'd have him behind a guy like Juwan Evans, as I highlighted earlier on. That's it. That's the action from Thursday. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and then we're going to take a look at all the action that we've got coming up on Friday. There are 10 games, and also look at the player spotlight. We're going to have a song by the Hot Potato Band. It's called Red Bone. Cool. And then we'll be back to talk some DFS. Have a look at the player spotlight. And today's podcast, we had multiple people request this guy, and it is, of course, my mate, Marquise Chris of the Phoenix Suns. Chris is a guy who I've been fairly vociferously down on for his piss-poor attitude, horrendous on-court play, propensity to foul, bad defense, all that sort of stuff. But I'm happy to admit when things change, and they've changed. I'm not going to admit that I was wrong, because I wasn't wrong at the time. He was terrible, and he was playing bad, and I said that I'd lost hope in him becoming a good player. It wasn't all gone, but I'd lost hope. He's turned it around. I'm not convinced that it's here to stay, because we saw some decent runs from him last season. But over the last six games, he's the 66th ranked player in fantasy, averaging 28 minutes a night, which is hugely important, the fact that he's staying on the court for 28 minutes. 13 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2 assists, and he's averaging over the triple 1.5. 2 triples, 1.5 steals, and 1.5 blocks, but perhaps most importantly, 56% field goals and 46% from 3. This is a guy that last season shot 32% from 3 and 45% from the field, and this season is at 43% and 33%. So some interesting numbers, but what do you believe? Because in that time, he's at 56% from the field, he's at 46% from 3, he's at 44% from the line. So from the three shooting categories, his worst percentage is from the free throw line, which makes zero sense. In everyone else's case, that's the best one by 20-30%. So is he having a fluky hot streak from the field and from three, or is he having a ridiculous cold streak from the free throw line? I guess trying to determine which one of those is the real thing is a key to trying to work out what Chris is going to be able to provide. Now, I do think that he does have a much stronger rest of the season from here, and I believe he's a pickup in pretty much every league, but I'm not convinced he's turning into a good player. He did have that nice game-winning block on that alley-oop the other day. He's hitting threes, obviously, and taking them at a much higher rate. He's at, over the last six games, 4.3 three-point attempts per game, where for the season he's at 2.6, and I guess that happens when you've got extra confidence and you're playing those extra 6 to 7 minutes per game. That's really helping what he can do. Along with the increased efficiency, Along with the increased efficiency, he's seen his usage rise up to 20% over those six games, which is up from 16% over the course of the season. So he has been impressive. He's hit multiple threes in four consecutive games. He's had a block in five of the last six games, not including the last one. So he had a streak of five games in a row with a block. He's a guy that you've got to go and add. But overall, the numbers from a real-life on-court perspective, they're not promising. He's got a PER of 11, which is worse than last season. He's still got a negative box score plus minus, a well below average win share number. But one thing I can say is impressive is his 3-point rates increased this season. His free throw rates increased this season. They're all positives. And he has looked better as a defender than what he did last season. So things are starting to push forward for Marquese Chris. And I guess the big thing is last season, the Suns were 8.7 points per 100 possessions better off with him on the bench. This season, they are 5.8 points better off when he is on the court. That is a huge, huge swing we're talking about here. Talking about, you know, 13, 14 point swing based from last season to this season as to how valuable he is in terms of production on the court. So that is an impressive part of what he's been able to do. I think he's a guy you go and grab. And as I've said 30, 40, 100 times, I don't think he's a great on-court player, but when he's out there, he can put up the fantasy stats. And we're seeing at the moment, the fouls are down, the minutes are up, and the production is following. So in that case, you add him, and I think you have to own him in pretty much every league. You have to be careful of that free throw percentage. But aside from that, I'm pretty happy with what we're seeing from Chris. It is his second season. He is only 20 years of age. And where is he? I'm trying to find his birth date. It's not listed on here, so that's awesome. I was going to tell you when he turns 21. There it is. He's only 20 and a half, so we're talking about another 6 months before he turns 21, which will be in July. So yeah, he's still very, very young. Progression is happening. Let's just hope it sticks for more than this six-game stretch, which is where it currently is, which, again, it's hard to extrapolate everything out from a six-game sample size, but things are definitely traveling in the right direction for Marquese Chris. The perfect DFS lineup from Thursday: FanDuel, Steph Curry, 47.3, Fatface Ray Felton, 22.1, Eric Gordon, 55.1, Lou Williams, 40.6, Gerald Green, 35.6, Andre Iguodala, 32.6, Draymond had 53.8. According to my graphic here, Blake Griffin had 443. That's incorrect. He had 44.3, and DeAndre had 48.9 for a total of 380.3, and that cost $60,000 on DraftKings. Steph, 50.25, Lou Williams, 46.25, Gerald Green, 38.75, Draymond, 58, DeAndre, 51.25, Eric Gordon, 52.75, Andre Iguodala, 30.75, and Klay Thompson, 40.25, for a total of 368.25, and that cost $49,400. Dollary-doos. The next game we're going to take, well, the first game we're going to take a look at is the Detroit Pistons and the Philadelphia 76ers. Of course, we need to know the status of one Andre Drummond, who was a weird late scratch in that game against Miami. We also don't know if Stan Johnson is going to play. We assume that Joel Embiid will be fine from his hand because he did play in that game against the Spurs, but it's always worth paying attention. At least it's the first game of the night. And if you're going to roster Embiid in DFS, make sure you're able to stay tuned to Twitter, to the Basketball Monster Twitter feed, to our Basketball Monster status update page, so you can actually see the news as it goes down rather than setting your lineup an hour in advance and then getting pissed when you come back and things have changed. That's what's one of the things. If you want to be a successful DFS guy, you have to have that time, at least leading up until lock, to pay attention to those things. A point guard, TJ McConnell, 4,400. He built up a few nice games, but that has dropped off recently. I'm not really feeling too excited there. Well, Dwight Bikes has been, instated as the Pistons' backup point guard, or at least in the last game. I don't know if that's going to continue. He's a very unsexy DFS guy. Then you've got the guys who actually start, Ish Smith at 6,100, whose numbers were pretty good up until that last game where he just put up the 24. He is It is a good matchup for Ish. Point guards have done pretty well against the Sixers this season. I think he's not a bad cash guy with limited upside. At shooting guard, Reddick's at 5,300. I think that's really strong for cash. His lowest score in his last five is 21, which is a very, very strong floor. While Avery Bradley at 6,000, that's a big drop. He played 38 minutes in that last game and shot the ball horribly. He's been bad for the majority of this season. I think 6,000 is just way too much for me to feel confident about using him. Luau Cabarro, Luki Kennard, maybe Kennard as a GPP on a 10-game slate. You want to differentiate yourself. He's played well, but I wouldn't feel great about it. If Stan Johnson's out, I'd be more interested in Kennard. At small forward, Bob Cove has really struggled, averaging just 22 over his last five. He's a $6,000 guy. I would rather take Covington than Avery Bradley, but I wouldn't want to use him in cash. He is a GPP sort of a guy who does have 50-point upside. Probably more realistic to say 40-point upside, but that's still good at 6X. That's 6,000. That's talking almost 7X worth of value that he can get to. Reggie Bullock at 4,500, even though he's been shooting crazily, like another 60% shooting night in the last game. He only put up 19 FanDuel points, and that's not enough at 4,500. So you'd have to be, at that price, you'd have to look at him and go, well, I need him to do better than he did last game. And he shot the ball at a crazy rate. He gets no assists, no rebounds, very limited other numbers. So he's not a great DFS guy at that sort of a price point. Stan Johnson's just not a good fantasy guy at all. At power forward, Benny Simmons, 8,600. The numbers look back on track for Simo. He had 39 the last time he took on the Pistons. He's averaging 40 across the last three after a little bit of a blip. I'm okay with using Simo here. And at 8,600, I think he's got easily the 50-point upside, but probably a 40-point floor, which is a good spot. Šarić at 6,700 was quiet in that last outing against the Spurs, but it is the Spurs, so it's a different animal taking on San Antonio versus taking on Detroit. I don't think there's a massive amount of upside here for Šarić if Embiid is playing, and the floor's limited as well. So he's a fade, while Toby Harris at 6,200. The numbers have been muted, but I think he's all right for cash. Given, again, the FanDuel pricing continues to be super tight, I think you can feel a level of confidence in Harris's floor here. Tone Tolliver, I don't think that he is going to start, but he's more of a chance to start if Drummond plays. If Drummond is out, it seems unlikely that he will get that starting position, but we will see. He's a minimum salary guy that can hit some threes. So if you do hear that he's starting, maybe he's worth a look. At center, Embiid, 10,500. He has struggled a little bit against Drummond. Not massively. I still think that at that price is probably a little bit high, more of a tournament guy. Whereas for Drummond, 9,500. If he plays, I am in on that. They say it's a pain tolerance thing, so he's not going to be restricted. Maybe the pain does bother him. I think at 9,500, I am interested in using him. And of course, if Drummond is out, Boban will be a guy to pay attention to. We saw him start, put up great value in the minutes that he played in that last game. On to DraftKings. DraftKings, again, there's value, with way more value across the entire slate. Nothing much I super love over here. It's pretty similar comments on most of the players. No other guys really stand out as having significantly different value. Avery Bradley at 5,300 is a little more enticing on DraftKings, but it's still not something I'm super interested in. Covington at 56, more of a GPP guy. Still Drummond at 91 and Simmons at 86. They have that similar sort of value than we saw from them over on FanDuel. The next game up is the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 4, and the total is 206 points here. Point guard Tyus Jones is at $6,000. The minutes were up for him in the last one, but only put up 17 points. I'm not feeling really good about using him, especially in a matchup against the Celtics, where you got Kyrie on the other side at 8,400, who you feel like is almost going to get 30 guaranteed. That makes him a decent cash play. He does have 50-point, 60-point upside, so he's got that tournament upside as well. So he's totally fine to use, and that's not an exorbitant price for him. Terry Rozier is an interesting one. 4,300. He's shooting the ball extremely well, and weirdly, in his last five games, his lowest is 28 points. Now, his highest is only 33, but that's just a stupid, stupidly high floor for a guy that's 4,300. Now, there's a significant risk with him that he plays 20 minutes and the shots don't fall. But if you want to put some of these high-priced guys in, Rozier, not a bad guy to take a look at. At shooting guard, Andy Wiggins, 5,700. Bash on Wiggins all you want, but at that price, he's worth a look. Yeah, 27 in the last game. He's averaging over 30 in his last five. And at 5,700, give me 30 on a tightly priced FanDuel slate. I'm in on it. I'm totally fine. And that's not even expecting him to have a monster. I think at that sort of price, he has value. Marcus Smart's at 57, for example. Now, Smart can put up numbers in a similar way, but he's not quite on the same level as Wiggins, I don't believe, from a DFS point of view. He's averaging less over the last three, less over the last five. He's got a lower total score or lowest highest score for the season. Everything leans Wiggins, so he'd be the guy that I would be taking there at exactly the same price. At small forward, Jaylen Brown's at 5,800, had 35 against the Cavs. That's it's a good performance. I think he's a strong cash play. His minutes aren't going anywhere, and the production's fairly solid. We don't really care too much about his piss-poor free-throw shooting in this format. Well, Jim Butler, 9,800 for Jim, putting up some really strong numbers. In fact, his lowest score over the last five is 39. It's a lot. Obviously, almost 10,000. You're hoping to get 50 out of him, which might make it a bit of a struggle, especially in this matchup against the Celtics, and he has struggled historically against Boston, although this is a different Boston team than what he'd faced as a member of the Chicago Bulls. But he is he's an interesting guy that I'd look at more as a GPP sort of a player. At power forward, Taj is at 58. The numbers have been a little bit down from Taj, but I think he's got a fairly safe floor, so he's a cash without being a tournament guy. While Jason Tatum, 5,300, I think that's strong for cash as well. So a fair bit of value in this game. Marcus Morris is not one of those players. At center, Al Horford at 7,000. I really like that. He has put up big numbers against Towns in the past, and yeah, averaging 43 over the last three outings. Totally fine. But I can say the same about Towns. He's averaged 50 in his last three against Horford and the Celtics. 9,200 for Townsie. You can totally see him getting at least a 40 here. So both of those centers are absolutely in play in this matchup. Aaron Baines, don't know if he's going to start or not. He didn't start the last game. I would imagine he's back in the starting lineup against a Gibson Towns front court, as opposed to Marcus Morris, who was in there to match up with Jay Crowder in that last game against the Cavs. I've got to look at DraftKings, don't we? Don't want to skip over the DraftKings people. Again, more value on this one. Marcus Smart, I do really like in comparison to FanDuel. 5,100 for Smarty in this one. That's a really strong price for him. He's averaged 25 over the last five and 29 over the last three. I don't think that he's really locked into cash, but he does have that 30-35 point upside, which at 5,100 is a pretty good play. Love Towns at 9,000. Love Butler at 8,400. That's a super play on Butler at 8,400. And Tyus Jones, way more appealing on DraftKings at 4,900. Still not ready to go in on it, especially not as a cash guy, but there is something there for the tournaments at 4,900 for Tyus Jones. All right, let's go to that next game now. It's the Toronto Raptors. It is the Milwaukee Bucks. The spread is even, and the total is 216.5. We just saw these teams going up against each other the other day, so maybe can we expect another Thon McCur performance, as we saw from him the last time and in the playoffs where he was quite strong. I don't think we should be relying upon that, but it's something to pay attention to for your tournaments. Eric Bledsoe, 7,200. He has torn apart the Raptors in the past. He averages 54 the last three times. The last matchup was no exception. I really think he's a strong option at 7,200, whereas Lowry at 7,500, also a strong option. I would prefer Bledsoe. It saves you money. He had a down game in his last outing, only 18 points in a blowout victory, but I think he'll be back in business here. D'Lon Wright, everyone's darling as well. 61 points in his last performance. Probably unrealistic to expect that again. At 4,800, does he have a level of upside? Sure, but there's no way that I'd want to use him in cash at that sort of a price. He's probably got like a 17 to 18 point floor, which is not far away. And I think that 60 is a totally unrealistic expectation. Yeah, I'd say ceiling looking at 30, 35. So that makes him okay for tournaments, but definitely nothing spectacular. If you look at his game logs, you'll see his minutes 30, 19, 29, 17. Like they're up and down. So don't get overly excited here. At shooting guard, Chrissy Middleton, 7,200, just been consistently putting up the 34s recently, which is fine at that price. I think the upside's a little bit limited with everyone else around, while Tone Snell's at 36, no. DeMar DeRozan, of course, killing it, but that means he's at 9,300 now. You wouldn't complain if he gave you the 56 points that he's averaged over the last three games. I think he's more of a tournament guy here rather than a cash guy just because of that price. I feel good that he's going to get me 40 to 45, probably closer to 40. But I don't think he's going to be getting you 50 or 47. That might be a little bit of a stretch. At small forward, Yanni at $11,000. He'd really struggled to provide any value in the last game. He got there. It was the first time he'd exceeded 5X value in, I feel like, about 2 weeks. Had 58 points in only 29 minutes. I think he's fine to go back onto. He's not at that ludicrous 12,000 where he was priced at for quite a while. He is absolutely worth a go at 11,000. providing that you can find other players to put in around him. CJ Miles, minimum salary guy, always a tournament sort of looks. He can go out there and knock down triples, but that's more of a DraftKings thing. The Jedi, OG Anunoby, minimum salary, just with Dylan Wright playing well, he's just not a stat accumulator, OG, at this point. The Muppet, John Henson, 5,300. I think he's got some upside here, but I don't love him as a cash guy. And then you've got Surge at 5,900. And I think that's limited upside, but I don't mind that for cash. Surge is playing much better than what we saw at the start of the season, so I think he's a decent option. The only problem you have is how well the Bucks have defended the power forward position so far, and that could be a concern for Surge. At center, Poeltl's at 4,100, outplaying Valanciunas in terms of minutes. But at 4,100, I'm not certain that he gets there. I think he's got limited upside in this format, and the floor is not, I'm not confident with it. While Valanciunas, really tough to get behind him with the way that he's being used. And of course, McCurr, who put up a big performance in that last game against Toronto, 27 points there. He's at 3,700. Obviously, just a GPP sort of an option. On DraftKings, Lowry's at 7,300. That's really good. And Eric Bledsoe at 7,300 as well. Also, both of those guys are strong cash options on DraftKings. While Adetokunbo at 10,700, I think is a super, super good price. And I'd definitely be looking at him as a cash and tournament guy. Much happier with DeRozan here at 8,900. That's a $600 price rise from last time. Still probably lean more towards GPPs for DeRozan, but feel a little bit better. While Poeltl at 3,900, maybe he's got a bit of tournament upside over on DraftKings. Valanciunas at 46, yeah, you'd have to twist my arm pretty bloody hard to get me to go for that on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next game. It's the New York Knicks, and it's the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 5. The total is 202 points. At point guard, the iron shoulder Goran Dragic has been killing it in the last couple of games. 47 in the last one, 41 average over his last three after a really stinking stretch. But the Knicks are a team where opposition point guards can put up good numbers. So at Dragic at 6,800, unless you're really sort of cautious based on the way that he'd folded prior to this, I think he's worth a look. The matchup, the current form, he looks like he hasn't lost everything, so he's back in business. Tyler Johnson was terrible in the last game, but the minutes were there. 33 minutes, just 10 points. At 5,800, I do think that, given, again, the matchup is a nice one for Tyler. He's a GPP type of a play. Here, Jarrett Jack at 42 and Frankie Ntilikina at 41. I've got no interest in them. At shooting guard, the Duke, Wayne Ellington, just too highly priced. Sorry, Duke, for 4,900. We know he can pop off. The minutes are there, but he has been quite limited in his production lately. While Courtney Lee at 5,400, like it for cash. Poor game from him in the last one, but I still think that's a good cash play. Joshy Richardson's at 6,200. He's just cranking out 30s almost every game, and that makes him a solid cash guy, and you can also use him in tournaments. A great, great matchup for him also. While McDirt and Thomas, cool, don't care about them. At power forward, Kristaps, 8,800.
Percentages.
He said that he's a little bit tired with back-to-backs. We've seen him drop off over the course of the last month and in his career as well over the last couple of months of the season. So that's something to pay attention to. 8,800, the price is dropping for Porzingis. I don't like him here outside of tournaments. While Jim Johnson at 5,700, he played his 24 minutes in that last one, went back after that onto the court to work out. He was ready to go. I think he pushes his minutes back up to 27 to 30. At 5,700, he is a 30-point upside guy, so I do like Jim Johnson here in a good matchup. While Olynyk is at 7,000 on FanDuel, and that's just too high. Now, he can beat that, and that makes him someone in a tournament to use. But there is no way that I want to use Olynyk at 4,300 in cash. And I could say the same for Mick Beasley at 6,500. Beasley's been cranking it out, averaging 35 over his last five. And you say it's 6,500. If I get 35, I'm okay with that. But it's a risky type of situation. It's much like a Jeremy Lamb in Charlotte. Then can you rely on 35 points in 23 minutes? That's the concern. That's a tough ask. But he's averaging 52 per 36 over his last five. So the production's been there. I just put a level of caution on that play. At center, Whiteside at 7,600. He was benched down the stretch of the last game. I'm not keen. Enes Kanter at 4,900. He is not playing 20 minutes a game, but both of those guys have got good records against the other's team. So they are definitely GPP guys. I think that at 4,900, I'd feel much more comfortable looking at Kanter. But his minutes obviously steer him away from being a cash guy, while Kylo Quinn's up to 4,600, mainly because he had 34 in that last game and now averaging 23 over the last five. If he was 4,000, I'd be in. At 4,600, he is more of a tournament guy that I don't feel super great about because we just never know when which cock we are going to see. On DraftKings tournaments, I like Tyler Johnson a lot here, 5,200. Bees at 5,300 is also really, really good on DraftKings. I'm real confident about him being that value on DraftKings. While Olynyk is clearly in play at 6,100, just again, one of those many players who has way more value on DraftKings. One player who has less value is Goran Dragic, the Iron Shoulder. He's at 6,600, so he's more of a fade, even though he's been playing well. More of a fade on DraftKings, especially with many other options out there that are quite good. While Porzingis at 7,800, I feel okay about Porzingis at that price on DraftKings. And again, with a three-point bonus that you get on DraftKings, it does help him out a bit there. So he is an option to me. Jim Johnson at 5,800, not as enticing as what the FanDuel price would have it. Phoenix and the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs are favored by 12. The total is 210. Tone Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Kawhi will be back, while Dan Green will remain out with that groin issue. So we should see more minutes for Bryn Forbes, more for DeJounte Murray, and maybe more for Pat Mills, but nothing to really get us too excited. Murray's a minimum salary guy. He got into foul trouble in that last game and played just 7 minutes. With all those guys back, with Parker and Leonard back in particular, and Ginobili, it's tough to use him. Parker's at 3,900. I think he's pretty limited upside-wise. Mills at 4,000 coming off his best game against the Sixers. Again, I think he'll be fairly limited here, but he's always a GPP type of a play, but that was close to his best game in that outing against the Sixers. As for the Suns point guards, Ulis and Cannon, they're not going to even add up to 48 minutes because Booker plays, you know, 5 to 6 minutes a game. At point guard, really hard to use those guys. At shooting guard, I like Manu here. 3,600 for Ginobili. He's playing 20 minutes a night on the nights that he plays. He's got 30 to 35 point upside. I think that at 3,600, he is an interesting cash guy, an interesting tournament guy to help get you some other expensive guys in. While Booker at 7,800, I'm not too worried about the fact that he only had 25 in a back-to-back in that last game at altitude. I am in on him. It is the Spurs, so that's a level of worry, but Dan Green's out, so that's a perimeter defender not there. Yes, Kawhi could go on him, but Kawhi could also be forced onto TJ Warren, so I like Devin Booker here at that price. Speaking of Tony Warren Jr., he is at 7,500, and since Booker's been back, his numbers have been much better. 38 points over the last three for TJ at 7,500. I feel like for him, for cash, it's okay. I'd probably discount him a bit because of the matchup. He's not the player that Booker is, of course, so that he's less likely to fight through that poor matchup, but he's still definitely someone who is who's playable as a tournament sort of a guy. Kyle Anderson will see his minutes drop because Kawhi is back, and Leonard's at 8,100. Look, he had 50 points in his last game in 31 minutes, so you expect he can get close to 30 minutes again, but they won't need to push him against the Suns most likely, so I think 8,100 is just probably a bit high. At power forward, LaMarcus Aldridge, 8,700, averaging 42 over the last five. Some good performances in there, some with Kawhi, some without Kawhi. A pretty decent floor, a good matchup. I think he's all right for cash. It's not the best situation, and it's not the best price, but again, we're looking at it relative to everyone else that's out there on FanDuel, and it's not a bad, reliable option. As for Chris, he's now up to 5,800. That's Marquise Chris. I'm not ready to lock him in at cash at that price just because the foul trouble can really torpedo things. But if he plays 30 minutes, I feel good that he'll smash through that. That makes him a GPP sort of a guy. At center, Alex Len, Pau Gasol, they've been poor recently. 17 average for the last three for Pau, 14 for Len. But of course, they can both go over 30, and that's where the value comes in. Len's seen his price reduced quite a bit. But of course, I wouldn't want to use them outside of tournaments at all. And Tyson Chandler, I'm not really feeling too much with him in terms of excitement, as most people wouldn't. On DraftKings, I like Devin Booker at 7,600. That's cash. Tony Warren Jr. at 6,100 is bang. That is really, really strong value. I don't care that Kawhi's on him. I love him at 6,100. Super, super value there. Not much else that really, you know, really stands out. Leonard's at 7,600, a big jump. LaMarcus at 82, a big jump from where they previously were. Now, I would take Aldridge over Kawhi in this game, based on the fact that he's likely to play more minutes. I think he's the guy to take a look at 8,200, but not a super strong recommendation on LaMarcus over there on DraftKings. Let's go to the Chicago Bulls. They are traveling to take on the Dallas Mavericks. The Mavericks are favored by 4.5, and the total is 212.5. At point guard, Dennis Smith, 5,900. Going against the Bulls, if a point guard is like going against the Nets, or it's like going against the Magic, good stuff usually happens. Smith has been playing much better recently, averaging 35 across his last three games. I like him a lot. He doesn't need 35 minutes to beat that value. I think it's a good spot to use him, while Chrissy Dunn has been up and down. He's at 7,900. Sure, he's got 50-point upside. He's also got a 25-point floor, which at 8,000 or almost 8,000. It's tough to swallow. So he is a strong GPP guy, but not a good cash play, I don't believe. You then got Yogi Ferrell, you got Jaron Grant. Not interested there, but JJ Barea is the one I want to take a look at. Now, the fact that his price is up to 5,900 does dissuade me from using him. He's averaging 31 over the last three, but at 5,900, I can take Dennis Smith. And Smith's upside, I think, far exceeds what Barea can do, and all the numbers will point to that also. At shooting guard, Wes Matthews at 5,000 has been good lately, but we know that his consistency level's not high, so I'm not feeling much there. Devin Harris at 35, no. Justin Holiday putting up much improved numbers, 29 average over the last five. The shot control is there, he can rebound, he can get steals. 5,900 for him is not a real high upside play. But I think, given the way he's playing, you could consider him for cash if you're really struggling there. At small forward, the pencil, Harrison Barnes, 6,600. The numbers have been not good. 25-point average over the last five. I still feel like you can have a level of value in his floor, but he's not a massive tournament guy. Well, Denzel the Hammer Valentine. Also, I don't know if it was anyone that listens to this podcast, but the Starters did a wrestling pun named episode the other day, and they asked you to tweet in who your wrestling pun names is, and someone tweeted in Denzel the Hammer Valentine. So if it was one of you guys, shout out to you listening, or else someone else has found the nickname. That, again, I have to give credit to my brother for bringing that to my attention. Maybe someone else had that, but if it was one of you guys that tweeted that in, shout out to you for getting Denzel the Hammer Valentine onto NBA TV with the Starters, and shout out to those guys as well. At power forward, Punch Bob is at 4,200. His numbers and his minutes have been reduced lately, just 7 points in 14 minutes in the last game. You know that with Nick Mirotic and Lauri Markkanen firing, he's not going to do too much. As for Markkanen, he's at 5,700. The numbers for him, really, really good lately. I think that that's a strong, strong cash play. While Mirotic at 6,800, I think it's too high. I don't know how high his upside is in limited minutes, and I think that for cash, the floor is too low, so I'm not interested. Dwighty Powell just eviscerated the Warriors from a DFS point of view. 36 points for Dwighty at 4,100. Brilliant, brilliant return. He's been putting up really good advanced numbers. Whether he can stick on the court long enough to put up those numbers remains to be seen, but Maxi Kleber looks to be falling out of favor a little bit in Dallas, and that can mean more Dwight Powell. So he is definitely worth a GPP look. Not interested too much in Kleber here, whose minutes and production have dropped off considerably. At center, Robin Lopez, 4,800. Not a bad cash center, a horrible GPP one, whereas where is Dirk? I can't even see him on my list here. Oh, there he is. Dirk's a power forward, actually. 5,400. I actually think that's pretty good for cash for Dirk. I'm not sure his tournament upside's high, but averaging 30 over his last five at 5,400, that is pretty strong. And I think it's in that very similar value to a Lauri Markkanen, who's been strong lately. On DraftKings, Chrissy Dunn at 71, much more into that. I feel pretty good about that for cash. That's a good spot for him. Barea at 53, also a cash option. Well, Dennis Smith, way higher on DraftKings, 6,300. So that takes him out of cash game consideration for me, but I still think that I know that he's got 50-point upside. So that does make him a GPP guy, and this brilliant matchup for him would put him into my player pool. Wes Matthews at 4,700. Yeah, I don't get the excitement for it. Maybe you could consider him for cash, but he's not someone that I would, whereas a guy like Powell at 3,800, again, a really nice GPP upside sort of a player. All right, let's go on to the next game. Where are we? We are looking at the Utah Jazz. We're looking at the Denver Nuggets. It's the Donovan Mitchell Bowl. The Nuggets are favored by 6.5, and the total is 207.5 points here. Utah still doesn't know if Raul Neto is going to play. He was dealing with a concussion. Now he's got a left knee bone bruise. He's not going to be a big part of the rotation regardless. At point guard, the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, 7,100. Him and Farton Will Barton, the only players who seem to be copying the Mike Malone, I need to get my bench more minutes statement. They're the only two guys who really saw their minutes reduced. He'd been really crushing it in big minutes. 7,100, though, is too high against a slow-paced team. As for Ravishing Rick Rubio, 5,800 for Rick. Don't look now, but he's averaging 33 across the last three. I want nothing to do with him here, though. This is not a spot where I'm going. 5,800 is a good way for me to use my money on Rick Rubio, despite him looking more promising lately. At shooting guard, Rocket Rodney Hood, 5,300. He couldn't have shot worse recently. Someone asked me today, do I expect this sort of shooting to continue? No. He's shot 28% over his last six games. There is absolutely zero chance that he remains from here on out a 28% shooter. So at some point, it's going to come back. He's still getting 30 minutes a night. He's still getting the shots up. And when they fall at even a decent rate at 5,300, he can smash through that. So I do like him as a GPP option here. Just be aware that for cash, he is a really tough guy to rely upon. As for the Don, 7,500 for Mitchell. I like that here. I like the floor for him. I like the 50-point upside. I think it's a strong option. Farton Will Barton at 6,000. Not interested. He's still dealing with that illness. They said he's fine to play. Not interested in him. While Gaz Harris at 6,800.
Nice, Gary!
Just an absolute monster in that last game. 47 minutes for Gaz. I think he's I don't think he's upside that great at that price. In a slow matchup, there are other players that I would rather take. At small forward, Joe Johnson had a big one in the last one. 4,100 for Joe, 31 points. The only time he's really even gotten close to looking like that sort of player. In a GPP, sure, if you expect that to continue, especially as the Nuggets are going to go big, meaning we're probably going to have Tarbo out of the rotation and more Jarepko and Joe Johnson, as we saw against the Pelicans. So that could give him a bit more extra, but of course, for cash, we're not interested. Well, Jingle and Joe's at 5,000. He's been playing okay on the court, but his fantasy production hasn't been making it up to that sort of a level. Good old Baby Neck at 5,200.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yep, that's pretty much how he's been all season. 36 in the last game. He had a 12-point game a couple of games ago. He's up and down. At 5,200, if it wasn't this matchup, I'd be in on him. But it is this matchup. It's the Jazz. It's slower. Ingles is a very, very good defender. So I think, although you might see Jinglin move across to Gaz and try and stop him or the Blue Arrow. I don't really love Wilson here too much. Sometimes maybe good. Trey Lyles, 6,200. Just literally just putting up numbers consistently. If you want to go revenge game, it's his former team. The lowest score that Trey Lyles has had in his last five is 26 points, which is remarkably high to me. I didn't realize his floor was as high as it is. Still not totally convinced at that price that he's a good play, but the numbers are speaking for themselves. His floor's great. It's a solid cash option. The numbers, the minutes aren't going away. If for some reason Malone takes minutes away from Lyles to give them to Fareed, then I don't know what life is anymore, but it is the doctor, so anything could really go down. Derek Favors at 6,400. He's got a very good record against the Nuggets, so that's something to pay attention to, but I don't feel good about it. He's not quite himself. He's more of a tournament guy. Jonas Jerebko should get a start at minimum salary, maybe, but I'd more likely say probably not. At center, Nikola Jokic, 9,700. The numbers don't look great against the Jazz, but remember, that's the Rudy Gobert Jazz. Averaging 29 over the last three for Jokic. I would look at him more as a tournament guy at 9,700. That's too high. Mason Plumlee, 5,300. Big game in the last one, fueled by five blocks. I remember that. And therefore, don't get too excited. Well, Epe Udo is minimum salary, and there is a significant reason for that. On DraftKings, Jokic at 8,800. Much more appealing on DraftKings. Absolutely consider him for cash, but again, more tournaments. Trey Lyles at 54 is a brilliant cash play, I believe. While Baby Neck at 48, I feel much better about him at that price on DraftKings than I do about him over on FanDuel. So some value there. Joe Johnson at 36, again, a tournament guy. The Don at 7,500. That's worse than what it is over on FanDuel. And the Blue Arrow at 6,900, not feeling super great about Jamal Murray, just with the Malone minutes uncertainty. The MMU. Washington. Memphis, the Wizards are favored by 4.5, and the total is 206.5 points. We know Conley's out. We know Andy Harrison is doubtful with a shoulder issue for the Grizzlies. Chandler Parsons is out as well. At point guard, John Wall's at 9,300. He's struggled so far this season, but still averaging 45 over the last three and 42 over the last five. I'll take that. The matchup's a little bit of a negative for him, but I still think that on this slate, he's worth a look, maybe as a different option to, say, a Kyrie Irving. At shooting guard, you've got Tyreek at 8,400. He's just continually... I didn't mention the other point guards because Mario Chalmers and Tomas Satoransky aren't going to get it done. Tyreek's at 8,400, just consistent numbers all the time. I'm fine with him. Lowest score in the last five, 38. That is a monster floor. He's carrying everything for this Grizzlies team, and somehow his salary dropped by $600. He is absolutely someone to go for. While Bradley Beal at 8,600, also since the return of John Wall, he is killing it. 47-point average in those last three, 46 across the last five. At 8,600, I feel like he is a good cash play. also with the tournament upside. With Andy Harrison not likely to play, we might see Wayne Seldon start, and he's just $100 over minimum. He closed the game against the Clippers. He had 19 points in that one, so don't fade Seldon completely in tournaments, because we saw him have a few decent performances. Otto Porter, 6,800 for Otto. I don't know what to make of Porter so much of the time. I don't feel like he's a strong cash play. I don't feel like he's a strong GPP play. He's more of a fade in most of these scenarios. Jim Ennis, Dylan Brooks, Kelly Oubre, nothing for me to get excited about with those other small forwards. Markeith, 4,900 for Markeith Morris. I like that as a tournament play. He's done very well against Memphis in the past in previous seasons with a 33-point average. It's a different Markeith this season than last season, that's granted, but at 4,900, he's absolutely worth a look. Jarrell Martin, 3,600. Mike Scott, 35. If I'm taking one of those guys, it's going to be Scotty as a GPP type of a guy, but none of them really get me excited, and Jermichael Green gets me the opposite of excited, despite that big performance that he had in his last game. At centre, Marcin Gortat at 46. Could he get extra minutes to match up against the girth of Marc Gasol? Maybe. He had 37 in 29 minutes in the last game. He's done decently well against Gasol in the past. I think he's a sneaky cash guy, also a 35-point tournament upside guy here, and I am not the biggest Gortat fan. While Marc Gasol at 8,200, just way too high. He's just missing so many shots. He's not producing anywhere near that level. That is fade time for me. On DraftKings, I like Beal a lot, 7,900. Tyreek is strong at 8,000, and Johnny Wall at 87 is also pretty good, but probably more lean towards tournaments. I'm fading Gasol as well. And everyone else fairly similar. Gortat, Morris with that tournament upside. Mike Scott as your GPP flyer type of a guy. Got two more games to go before we wrap this up. The Atlanta Hawks and the Portland Trailblazers. The Blazers are favored by 7, and the total is 207 points here. Dame Lillard appeared on the injury report with a calf issue. He had that wrap the other day, so not the hamstring, but still got to pay attention there. Lillard's at 8,700. Love the matchup for him. I'm in on using him for cash and tournaments, while Dennis Schroeder at 7,400. I feel like Schroeder at that price is almost a lock for 30 points, which makes him not a bad cash play with a decent upside. So I think he's worth a go. Of course, we're getting rid of Shabazz Napier, who had 3 points in his last game with Lillard back. At shooting guard, CJ is at 7,300. 50-point upside, no doubt about that. Although he hasn't reached 50 at all this season, you feel like a big one is coming at some point. But I don't like that for cash. It's just a little bit too high. I think he's more of a... he's more of a 30 to 32 point guy rather than a 36 to 37 point guy. And that's not a big difference, but it can be important. Kent Bazemore's at 6,000, coming off a nice performance. But again, at 5,800, I'd be all over him. At 6,000, probably lean more towards tournaments. While Marco Bellinelli, the Italian Stallion, 3,900 for Bally. I feel good about that. I feel like he's getting 20 almost every night at the moment. So for cash, that's totally fine. The artist formerly known as Torian Prince is at 5,800. I feel good for that for cash. That's a good option. Or Evan Turner at 4,800. The minutes have been way up for Turner. We're seeing Mo Harkless play almost exclusively at the four, taking guys like Zach Collins out of the rotation. And that's enabling Evan to get more playing time. But that's a $1,100 bump in his salary. There is still some value there. There is still some cash value. It's probably more tournament, though, with that cash increase, or that, yeah, with that price increase. But he has been playing more minutes than expected recently. At power forward, Ersan's at 5,900, a strong tournament guy, a weak cash play. Ed Davis, Tyler Kavanagh, Al-Farouq Aminu. Aminu's at 5,400. Yeah, that's a tournament play, but I don't like it for cash. Well, the Baptist at 55. The minutes are frustrating. He's still averaging 26 over his last five in 22 minutes. 5,500 makes him more of a tournament guy on FanDuel, but you know he's going to produce. He produces pretty much every time. It's just about the minutes. Yusuf Nurkic has seen his numbers rise, averaging 36 in the last five in just 27 minutes. He's now at 7,500 on FanDuel. It's a full $1,000 increase. They're a little heavy-handed on the price rises over on FanDuel. So that takes a level of appeal away from Nurk, but he's a 40-point upside guy, 45-pointer. So he is a comfortable GPP guy. The matchup for him is pretty solid as well. So if you wanted to use him in cash, I don't think it's a bad move. Miles Plumlee, on the other hand, is. On DraftKings, Schroeder, love him at 7,000. Prince at 5,700, also strong. And the Baptist at 51. Now, I can get behind John Collins at 5,100. I think that's fine for cash. Get your 25 to 26 out of him and push to 30 to 35 if, for some reason, they give him more minutes. Everyone else sort of falls into the similar scenario. Lillard at 85 and McCollum at 77 are pretty good. Lillard's a better option there than CJ if you've got that extra cash to spend up on. Let's go now to the last game of the night. It is the Charlotte Hornets. It's the Los Angeles Lakers. It's Dwight Howard back at Staples Center. The Hornets are favored by 2.5, and the total is a very big 216.5. Brook Lopez is listed as probable after returning in the last game from his ankle sprain, while Lonzo Ball got through practice, but he is still listed as questionable. If Lonzo is out, expect Tyler Ennis to get the start. Again, I don't know if Brook will start or if Julius Randle will remain starting, but regardless, Lopez is probably not going to be exceeding 20 minutes, irrespective of if he starts or not. As for Lonzo, he's at 7,800 because he's putting up 38-point average over his last five. So he's absolutely a GPP option against the Charlotte backcourt, which does allow point guards to put up numbers. But of course, you wouldn't be feeling comfortable about locking him in cash. Kemba, on the other hand, at 8,000, I feel like he's almost a 36-point lock, so I do like Kemba at that $8,000 mark quite a bit. Ennis, of course, is your GPP guy if Lonzo's out. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope's at 5,500. He's not doing a huge amount offensively, but if for some reason in one game the shots fall, then he'll get 35. So he is a strong GPP guy, but a piss-poor cash option. Batum's at 6,000. The numbers have been more impressive. His lowest score over his last five is just 25. So that's a decent floor. The minutes are fine. I think that Batum at 6,000 is fine for cash. I'm just not sure about his upside for tournaments. While Jez Lamb's at 6,100, so higher price. He's been outproducing Batum for sure, but I don't feel good about the higher price at lower minutes. Small forward Brandon Ingram's at 6,400, a tournament guy who's been struggling, but you know, 40-point upside's pretty clear with him. Kid Gilchrist I don't care for too much. And then the power forwards. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, is down to $6,000. He was not impressed with the Lakers' performance against the Thunder, as he shouldn't be. So he called them out. He had 35 the last time they took on the Hornets. At $6,000, I think he's a very, very strong play, even though Lopez is back, which will push a few more minutes for Randle at power forward. Frank the Tank at 45 and Marvin Williams at 37. Neither of those guys get me excited, nor does Larry Nance. At center, Julius Randle at 6,300. He's got a very good record against the Hornets. I don't trust it at all for cash because I just don't know how Walton's going to use him. Tournaments maybe, but there are better options out there. Brookie Lopez at 38. Also a very good record against Charlotte, but again, the minutes are the real concern. He is an interesting tournament guy just for that low price. While Dwight at 8,600, I think that Dwight is looking at a 40-pointer here, which makes him a decent play at that sort of a salary. On DraftKings, I like Lonzo a lot here at 6,700, but of course, only for tournaments. Dwight at 84 is pretty strong as well, and then most of the other guys are the same, except Kuzma's way higher on DraftKings, 7,200, so that's probably a fade situation. Batum also less appealing. Randle and KCP, not a huge amount happening with either of those guys over there. Let's wrap this up. Let's go to Yahoo. For tournaments, it's the process. Joel Embiid, Dwight Howard, Dennis Smith, Tyus Jones, Michael Beasley, the Muppet John Henson, TJ McConnell, Kylo Quinn, Joe Johnson as some options there. For cash, Terry Rozier, Marco Bellinelli, Jakob Poeltl, DeLon Wright, Evan Turner, Tyson Chandler, Dirk Nowitzki, Wes Matthews. Where are we? Scroll up. Johnny Wall and Nick Jokic. On Moneyball for tournaments, Embiid, Adetokounmpo, Jokic, Simmons, Beal, Don Mitchell, Goran Dragic, CJ McCollum, Mick Beasley, Marcin Gortat, DeLon Wright, Joe Johnson, Brook Lopez, Dwight Powell, Manu Ginobili. And for cash options, I've got Evan Turner as a name there, Lauri Markkanen, Andrew Wiggins, Kent Bazemore, Dennis Smith, Kyle Kuzma, Harrison Barnes, Yusuf Nurkic, Eric Bledsoe, Kawhi Leonard. And for the last one, it is draft stars for tournaments. Embiid, Lonzo, Olynyk, Tyler Johnson, Markieff Morris, Evan Turner, Joe Johnson, Jakob Poeltl, Kyle O'Quinn. And for cash plays, it's Mason Plumlee, Wilson Chandler, Ersan Ilyasova, Justin Holiday, Mick Beasley, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, JJ Barea, Otto Porter, Dario Saric, Chrissy Dunn, Kyle Lowry, and Nikola Jokic. Don't forget to check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network and follow along on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. Same on Facebook. And if you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star review. You can also find this show on Google Play, on Spotify, on Stitcher, and on TuneIn. And of course, on YouTube, where you can give it a thumbs up and a subscription. That's a great way of supporting the show as well. I hope you guys have a successful fantasy weekend. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Kent Bazemore.